throw it. And this will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Another week jam-packed of news from Dolphins camp and lots to kind of touch on. Some positive news as well. I note that we kind of got into the pod and Lee sent me a message about like Hunter Long's injury hopefully not being too bad. So that was the kind of negative news I was going to cover. And hopefully if it's not too bad, we don't need to talk about it. So we'll just keep the good news coming. Si, how are you doing, mate? You all right?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Andy. Looking forward to catching up with what's come out of Clump this week. Camp, sorry, not Clump. In joke there. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Lee, how you doing, man?
Yeah, doing well. Glad we've got some good news to talk about.
That's it. That is it, yes. And as Simon alluded to there, Dolphins Twitter remains as toxic as ever. So that's all good fun. Right, some news then. Most prevalent, I guess, is the Xavier Howard stuff. New contract, after all that kind of back and forth we've had over the last couple of weeks. The Dolphins have given Howard up to $3.5 million incentives for 2021, including $1 million for making the Pro Bowl or being named an All-Pro, which if he plays all 17 games, you'd imagine he will probably do so. They've agreed to rescind $93,000 in fines for skipping mandatory June minicamp, moved roster bonuses of $500,000 in 2022 to base salary and guaranteed it against injury, converted a 2022 $100,000 workout bonus to base salary and guaranteed it against injury, and converted Howard's injury guarantee to full guarantee the first day of the league year. They've also agreed to revisit the contract at the end of this season. Si, initial reactions to that?
Initial reactions to that are that I'm not going to repeat it because I can't remember it all. But initial reaction to that, very pleased he's going to be on the team without any distractions for the 2021 season. But it's just literally pushing the problem out to a year's time, isn't it? So whilst I suppose they give themselves a bit of time to assess Howard's form and his fitness, but it's literally pushing everything out into the future, isn't it? So whilst it's a good short-term win, it does still create question marks long-term.
Yeah, I note that the kind of maximum he can earn is about $16.5 million this year, which obviously takes him above Byron Jones. I mean, Lee, is that always the aim to kind of to skip above Jones, or do you think he was kind of just wanted more money regardless?
Yeah, I don't know if he's really got what he wants. I think they've just got to a stage where this is the best it's going to be. So, you know, it's still based on him performing. History says that. Is he going to do that in back-to-back seasons? Don't know. So there's just as much chance he doesn't earn as much as that, you know, as Tottenham's totals up on paper. I hope he does. I don't have any problem with them pushing it into next year, because I think it's essentially what they tried to do this year. Hopefully one of the corners on the roster shows that X is tradable and that you can trade him before the start of the next calendar year, because then you actually lose some of the guarantees as well. And the Dolphins aren't on the hook for actually a lot more than they were in the first place. So I think, it's bought everybody time and it's done enough to keep X and his agent happy. I think I thought the interesting quote afterwards was that they treated us with class, and was it respect and class after coming out and saying they've been dealt with in bad faith? As it just goes to show how that comment literally only refers to what's happened in the last 5 minutes rather than what's happened. You know, we were all, everyone's saying, you know, us and other podcasts and the national media, oh, well, they paid him based on 2 years of injuries and stuff like this. And it's like, yeah, they were literally referring to the last 5 minutes when they said, no, we're not giving you what you want. So, you know, I think this is the end that everybody wanted. Like, let's be honest. We, you know, but I think everyone's happier to have him on the team. So
the other thing I thought of was that he's banking on his own ability. He says he's one of the best cornerbacks in the league and he's the cornerback one on the Dolphins, and he's banking on himself to support that argument, given the incentives are based around him playing all the games and also making the Pro Bowl. So he's assuming that he's going to perform at that high level and he's going to stay fit. And of course, he has to have that argument. Otherwise, they're not going to be paying him in the first place. So I think overall, it's a win for him because he gets an opportunity to prove himself yet again. But it's also a win for the Dolphins in that they're protected somewhat in if he doesn't perform up to the standards that he sets and or he does miss time through injury.
It doesn't really fulfill the original statement that you put out on Instagram, which, you know, is looking further and further like a, you know, probably a misstep in management, because he made a point that he'd outperformed his contract. Well, they've done nothing but say, well, go on and do it again. You know, you're only getting paid, you know, if he outperforms the contract again. So his performance before doesn't really account for much other than getting him to the table. So, you know, but yeah, I think both sides are able to sit in front of the media and say, we got what we wanted. And that's kind of all you can hope for.
Yeah, exactly. And as we'll touch on later when we do our position previews, the cornerback class, the cornerback group here might have like forced the Dolphins to the table as well. Quite a couple of bit of the feedback we're getting. So I think good deal for both sides, like you both say. And I also look, we've got like an 80%, he needs to play 80% of the games to get an extra $700,000 in there as well. So there's all the kind of injury stuff kind of spattered throughout, isn't there?
And when we make the playoffs, they can sit in for the last couple of games.
Exactly.
Get that money back. I do think it's interesting as well that, you know, they say, oh, and we, you know, we'll agree to come back to the table next year, renegotiate. Yeah, I bet the Dolphins will be sitting at that table if he underperforms as well. Got it. We want to lower that cap number.
That's it. And you've got to think that trading him before the draft next year is a real possibility, haven't you? Like you alluded to, Si, just saying that, you know, it's 1 year, then they come back to the table. Are they really going to want to do it all again? Or they can't, like, if he's still got however many years left of that contract, I can really see if he performs above average this year. If he goes lights out, maybe they'll reward him with a new contract for a couple more years. But he's above average and we're confident we can replace. I can definitely see that trade happening before the draft, give the Dolphins a bit more room to play with the trade. Sorry, Quan.
Yeah, and he's 28 now, so in a year's time, he'll be 29, approaching 30. So you've got to think I don't know what the average age is in terms of what the top cornerbacks look like in the NFL these days, but he's not going to have, you would say, another 3 or 4 years at the high level that he's performing at now. So maybe next year is the ideal time to trade him, particularly if one or two of the cornerbacks on the rosters, I'm sure we'll go into, start performing above expectations.
Yeah, and you've got to think that before we got this done, there were quite a few teams looking for him as like even as a one-year rental sort of thing. You imagine the fact that the Cowboys and the Saints have both been out and signed like lesser cornerbacks in the last couple of days show that they were very much sniffing around him. Maybe they've been sniffing around like Richard Sherman as well, obviously some off-the-field stuff to deal with there. But yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it, Lee?
It's probably part of the reason this deal gets done is because the teams that were looking at him, I don't imagine we're willing to give him the extra money. They might be willing to help get him out of Miami, but it's I want more money on this contract. And, you know, like we say, the Dolphins haven't exactly ponied up an awful lot of money, especially not free money. Do you know what I mean? But they've not just like gifted it to him. He's got to go out and earn it. So again, he's not really just been given the extra money he wanted. And I'm guessing the other teams probably weren't willing to do that either. So once you bring back in the compensation that the Dolphins would want and the few teams that are actually able to facilitate that, I think that probably just plays into why everyone accepts a one-year deal when we get to next year and probably play up this same saga again, probably to the same result because we'll only be 3 years into the extension. So, you know, there's not an awful lot that you can do apart from say, okay, you've outperformed it. Let's guarantee some more money than the following year.
Yeah, definitely all very good news, I think. I don't know, I still feel quite reserved about it. Obviously, it's like a temporary deal, but for this season, got a secondary in shape. Like exciting to see what he can do. Hopefully, he goes out there and kind of walks the walk for a second year in the row. You know, defensive player of the year material last year, wasn't he? And it feels difficult to me that he's going to get another 10 interceptions, but you can't doubt, can you, Si, the kind of, you know, the impact he has on the roster.
as I said last week, you want your best players on your team, and we've got him on our team for at least another year. So at the end of the day, you can't argue with that.
Yeah, exactly. Talking of having best players on our team, there's a rumour going around saying that we are in the market for a new right tackle. I've obviously drafted Liam Eikenberg in this year's draft. He's been playing at left guard in camp, which is quite interesting, given that we all kind of expected it to kick out to tackle, or at least flip to the other side, as he played left tackle for Notre Dame last year. Lee, I mean, have we botched the draft this year? Is it kind of a bit of a flaw? The front office have decided that they need a new right tackle now, if they indeed have. And like, what do we do to go about addressing it?
I think the Dolphins are always looking for players. And I think if there's a report, you know, I've said this so many times, I think if there's a report out there saying we're specifically looking for a right tackle, I'm not going to believe it till they actually make a trade for a right tackle. It's too specific. And let's be honest, the Dolphins don't tell us anything. You know, they dragged on the Xavier Howard. We're making progress. There's never any information. We're making progress. Like, he said that from day one. Going back to the Hunter Long injury, people keep looking out for news on the Hunter Long injury. Does anyone know what Preston Williams did yet? Because he was week to week last year, and he's still on the PEP. So, you know, I would question how much information is getting out. When it comes to the draft and Liam Eikenberg specifically, I do think this is a product of projecting players moving position. It's, you know, I did say going into the draft, this happens every year with O-linemen. People say, oh, he's playing left tackle, but he projects to be a left guard based on never playing the position. Do you know what I mean? And I think often it's not going to work out. So I'm not worried after, what, you know, 2 weeks of camp before the first preseason game. They might have just decided that.
Don't say that, Jesse Davis is good. Don't say it.
No, but they might have decided that Jesse Davis is better at right tackle than whoever's going to play left guard if Leon Eikenberg doesn't. So it might be the strongest lineup, even if it's not a good lineup, you know. But we've got a long way to go. I mean, let's see him playing some joint practices and see what happens.
That leads me on to the takeaway I got from this. It's not so much about necessarily where they see Liam Eikenberg fitting. It's more, I think, to do with the fact that Solomon Kinley isn't listed as the left guard starter, as we all would have penciled him in as before this training camp started. So maybe this move or this rumour that they're looking for an offensive tackle is perhaps more to do with his demotion in terms, and we'll talk about the depth chart shortly, but I just wonder if that's what's triggered it, because you look at the starting tackles now, you've got Jackson and you've got Jesse Davis. So whilst it might not be, or it could be what they think is the strongest looking lineup, it's not necessarily given the two strongest left tackles on paper. So I mean, we're big fans of Jesse Davis, aren't we, on the pod? He says with a wry smile, but it's... So no wonder that rumour's out there if we think we have those opinions of Jesse Davis, and of course a lot of other people do as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's difficult, isn't it? Because I mean, I think we've all kind of talked about the weakness of the O-line, but you've also got to remember, of course, right tackle is of added importance on this team. It's the blind side of Tua. It's the kind of, you know, everyone else goes out and pays their left tackle a ton of money. If they haven't got this right yet, it's a little bit worrying for the kind of season. And we've talked about it last week, Tua needing time to get the ball out of his hands and stuff like that. That's going to be absolutely crucial. And so I wonder if they are in the market. I mean, I don't know if there's any names that spring to mind for you guys. I've had a quick look, and I think somebody tweeted earlier saying Rick Wagner formerly of the Baltimore Ravens, or DeMar Dotson, formerly of the Denver Broncos. They're both kind of free agents, and it just makes sense to me to bring one of them into camp, even if you're not going to pay them a ton of money. If they're free agents, what's the harm in bringing these guys in to at least have a go? But Lee, I don't know what you reckon to that. Do you think it's more important to let these young guys that we've got on the roster already have a go and work through the preseason, or should we be looking to kind of at least bring in some veteran sort of, you know,
bodies? Yeah, I'm willing, I'm willing to let these guys work it out in the preseason, because there'll be guys that are being cut after, you know, there'll be veterans that are cut after the last week. And I expect a lot of veterans to be able to be plug and play. You know, I don't, they don't need to know, you know, necessarily everything, but I expect them to be able to do a good enough job. Some of these, you know, kind of really seasoned vets. So yeah, I'm willing to let the young guys kind of try and work it out. And I think it's also really difficult because we also expect this defense to be good. So we don't really know how bad they're looking. You know, they look terrible against our defense. That's, you know, so did the Rams O-line at times last year. So did the Cardinals O-line, you know, and the people expecting big things of them this year. So it's not, I don't know if struggling a little bit in camp is necessarily a huge red flag. I'm really excited for the joint practices, and the fact that we're doing it twice this year, I think is really big. Getting to go up against some other teams over multiple days, rather than just here's a series and you might go against the starters in the first quarter, you might just go against backups all night. It doesn't really tell us enough when it comes to O-line play, because we're not, you know, we need that competitive, you know, that competitive environment. So I think the joint practices will tell us a lot. I do find it interesting that it doesn't seem like Austin Jackson's been given any try at right tackle. You know, again, I'm not necessarily a fan of moving players from the left to the right. I think, you know, we've seen far more struggle than take to it easily. But, you know, he seems to be one of the first players penciled in on the O-line. Then, you know, maybe it's worth trying him over there. You know, I thought he played well most of last year. I mean, he was obviously playing hurt a little bit as well, but for the most part, did a really good job. But if you're going to drop in the veteran market, I think there'd be plenty, and I'm not worried about necessarily doing it now unless you can get a really good caliber starter.
I'd quite like to see him get some veterans in now, if only to act as an incentive to the young players to push hard and earn that place in the lineup, rather than being complacent and look over the shoulder and think, oh, we haven't really got any competition anymore. Let's bring some veterans in to give them a push.
Yeah, I think I'm in that position. Go on, Lee.
I would say to any rookie on this team that looks behind him and says, I've got no competition, you are not going to be in Miami very long. good luck to you.
I just, my big concern is that Khalil Mack walks in to have a go at our O-line this week, and he's like very friendly with Tua by the end of it. He's tapping that red shirt quite often.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're not allowed to tackle even though it's a joint practice, are they, in terms of the red-shirted players?
Yeah, so he's going to get quite nice and personal, give him a little tap on the back every now and again. So that, Jesse Davis, is your goal, to stop that happening. Just can't see it happening. Sorry, Lee, go on.
No, but a great player to be going up against to find out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better than going up against one of the bottom defenses in the league, where it doesn't really give you enough information. Like, let's be honest, if they're going to struggle, we want them to have a horror show over the first couple of days and force the Dolphins into going to do something.
Don't know whether you guys saw on Twitter today, there was a really good picture of when the Dolphins played the Rams last season, and you had Aaron Donald trying to get to Tua, and you had like five offensive linemen all moving towards Donald to try and stop him. I think that speaks volumes. I think that was an awesome picture, just to think about how they were trying to combat him, and maybe they'll do the same to Mac, who knows.
What a player. That's the one player in the league, I think I said it last year, if we could have on the Dolphins roster, I'd have him on that Brian Flores defensive line every day of the week. Right, next thing is the depth chart, which you've already mentioned, Si. Lots of fun reaction on Twitter, isn't there? People feeling ill. I don't know why they're feeling ill. What they are, you know, it's a piece of paper. Very bizarre. Anyway, Leo, flip it your way first. Anything that kind of stands out? Obviously, we've talked about the O-line, so maybe stay clear of that. But I do know that Liam Eikenberg's the only rookie who's actually listed as a starter, so that's quite interesting. Sorry, go on, over to you.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely a standout. I don't know how much stock I'm putting in a depth chart at all.
None.
Yeah, exactly. You know, their names on the paper. So I think even Brian Flores said this last year, they fill it out because they have to, because I don't think otherwise he'd be filling out a depth chart. And let's be honest, there's a chance those starters don't even play in a preseason game. So it means absolutely nothing It's just the league mandates them that they have to do it, so they do it. To be honest, I'm not particularly concerned. You know, we know you could read into it and say, oh, this is the starting defense. Well, the starting defense will be depending on what our opponents trot out on offense. They're not throwing those guys out there no matter what. That's not the way it works. So, and the same on offense. It depends what the first play call is. It's got nothing to do with what the depth chart says.
I do agree in every way about the lack of importance of this depth chart. But there is one thing, one position that which intrigued me a little bit, and that was the third cornerback position. We'll get onto the cornerback depth in a bit, but Justin Coleman appearing to kind of slide into that slot corner. I think he's been really unsung so far over this camp. Obviously, haven't seen much of it, but he was one of those guys that came in a few days into free agency and we were all kind of looking for splash plays in the receiver market. But Coleman just seems to be one of those guys who just very much fits the mold of this Flores defense. Very hardworking, incredibly kind of versatile, can move inside, outside, cover your big tight ends or cover your fast slot receivers. So I think that's good to see him at that level of the depth chart already. Obviously, with a big caveat that this might just be any old way they put it down, but kind of interesting that he's beating out Needham and Igbinoghene as well. So, yeah, a little bit interesting there. Si, anything jumping out to you, mate?
Yeah, I mean, we all know it's going to change and it doesn't really mean much at this stage, but there are some positions on the depth chart that you think actually that does look as though that's probably going to be how it ends up prior to week one. For example, we all know about the quarterbacks, so I'm not going to mention them, but the running backs, you've got Gaskin, Brown, Ahmed as the 1-2-3, and you'd have thought that would be the 1-2-3 going into the season anyway. Similarly, with the tight ends, you've got Gesicki, Shaheen and Smythe, followed thereafter by Carter and obviously Hunter Long. You would have expected to climb his way up the depth chart. But overall, those three positions you would have thought are pretty accurate in terms of the week one lineup anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Yeah, it's poor Jared Doakes, though, sat there fifth on the list. We were all expecting big things. It was the only running back we drafted, Lee shaking his head at me. We're expecting big things, mate. Don't lie.
Yeah, listen, they've not really done much, though, any of them, have they? So unless you're a really top elite rookie, like Jalen Waddle's nearly there, but unless you're a really elite rookie, there's no way you've done anything to deserve or warrant going top of the depth chart. And that's the story for Jared Doakes. He's got to prove himself, as have all of the rookies.
Yeah, no doubt. Go on, mate.
Jared Doakes strikes me as the kind of player as well that, you know, you're only going to see if he's any good, you know, again, in really live sessions where he's expected to hit a hole. You know, there's going to be contact, a lot of contact. We're not expecting him to get the ball in wide open spaces. We've already mentioned the weaknesses of the O-line. Like, he's not going to be running through bus lanes. It's, you know, so again, he's going to be one of those that benefits from as much preseason play as they can feed him. I don't know how much preseason play you need to give Gaskin and Ahmed. You know, obviously they need some touches because they need to get, you know, game ready, but you know, you can heavily skew that in the favour of someone like Doakes to see, you know, really what he's capable of.
Definitely. And that kind of moves me on very nice to the last kind of news bit I wanted to talk about, which was more about what we're looking to see on Saturday. Obviously, got the first preseason game against the Bears. 6 o'clock start here. I will be on the way back from watching the mighty Birmingham City. Sides me watching Nottingham Forest. So, Lee, your chief Dolphin UK reporter here. Yeah. What are you looking for, mate, from the game? Like, what's the kind of, is there any kind of one narrative you're looking for, or are you looking for several bits and pieces?
No, looking for everything. I mean, to be honest, we don't get to see camp, so I'm looking to see some of these players play, and then we can start to form our own opinions, not just read, you know, some of the perhaps biased media opinions, see some of the highlight videos that are sent out, which of course they only put out highlight videos. So that's again skewed in the favor one way or the other. So I think it'd be interesting. I don't know how much we see the starters based on the fact that they're having live practices, they're having joint practices beforehand. I think the whole point of that is so we don't have to put them out there in game situation, because I can have what they're having, 2 days of practice, 3 days of practice leading up to the game. So we can get a lot of that work done without actually putting the players out on the field. So I'm a little bit torn as to whether we see the offense, the starting offense or not. I think we'll see the rookies one way or the other, because I think they want to get them out there, just get a feel for, going through the whole sort of build up, travel to the game, getting ready, actually playing. You know, we see even at the Hall of Fame, the players that weren't playing suited and booted, you know, I think it's important to go through that. But yeah, I think for me, it's just going to be about, right now we can start to assist some of these players by actually seeing their play for ourselves. You know, we've seen the college highlights, we've broken down every aspect of everybody's game, and now we're actually going to get to see them over here. So
that's it. Go on, Si.
I was going to say, it'd be nice, like you said, Lee, it's going to be good to see some proper action, but you got to bear in mind that it's not going to be a true reflection of what the offense is going to be throughout the season. Of course, having a severely restricted playbook to watch, but nevertheless, it's still going to be good to see them in the flesh, and let's hope they can shake off that rustiness and stay clear of any serious injuries.
Yeah, there's still nothing better than seeing the Dolphins run out onto the field for the first time each year. It's still exciting, even if you know it's a preseason game, and by the third quarter, you're thinking, by God, how am I still sitting through this? I find the same thing with the Hall of Fame game. Are you really excited? Because, oh my God, this football. And I watched the first 5 minutes and go, oh my God, we're back at the Hall of Fame game and no one's playing, and this game is absolutely horrible.
Yeah. I definitely felt that watching the kind of 40-minute watch back of that. Yeah, absolutely.
But you still watched it, right?
I know. Sat for it. But, the one thing I am actually looking forward to is, we've mentioned it briefly, is that kind of battle for the centre position. We've got Michael Deiter down on the depth chart as the starting centre, which is a bit of a comeback for him, really, isn't it? Like, you know, last couple of years, he's been very, like, hit and miss, starting a few games in that, in the, not the tank season, but the season we weren't very good, and then last season didn't really feature at all. So a bit of a comeback story for him. Fair play if he does win the job. Looking to see how he does, especially if Tua starts the game and he starts, handling the ball. That kind of connection is going to be vital all season, isn't it? So that's the one thing I just wanted to draw out very quickly. But yeah, I guess, like both of you, really looking forward to seeing the rookies. Hope we get to see a bit of the Doakes. So I do, do fancy, like, the kind of hype that you get around these rookie skill position players is always quite fun. So let's get on board with some Jared Doakes. Yeah,
break off 120-yard run and let's induct him into the Ring of Honor.
And there's a nice alliteration for you. Let's see some Dukes from Doakes.
There you go. That's what we like. And on that bombshell, as Jeremy Clarkson would say, let's move on to the oppositional kind of previews. We can start with the running back group, because we're going to cover that anyway. I think the running back group is the weakest group on the roster. Am I right, Lee?
I'm going to be very careful about what I say here, because I'm really hoping they make me look bad, but this room terrifies me. I just think that we all identified that this was a room that needed work, and Malcolm Brown was the answer we got. Because let's be honest, Jared Doakes is probably the back end of that room, possibly even a practice squad guy. So really, Malcolm Brown was the answer we got, and we all identified it as a big need. So if it doesn't work out, it's going to be why didn't we had all the ammunition and stuff to do it with multiple players. You know, there was multiple backs in this draft. There was multiple backs in the last draft. There's plenty of ways to go about making some additions here. So if it's still a problem, it would concern me that, again, going back to something I said before, that this coaching staff and front office don't value the position, which means it could be a position that we always find we feel like we're lacking in, which I think probably, you know, is kind of the New England model. Like, it's very rare that New England have had a back there. You go, yeah, that's the guy I really want on my team when he hits free agency. And that's why they end up signing cheap deals somewhere and usually end up going back to New England again afterwards.
Go on, Si.
See, I've got another theory behind this, and I think I've said it once before in a previous podcast, in that I'm wondering whether, given the running back is traditionally has got the shortest career span out of most positions, if not the most, I wonder whether they're seeing that as the final piece of the jigsaw, having worked on the rest of the roster in the meantime, the last piece to plug in to maximise that window of opportunity for a Super Bowl run is the running back position, to keep that window open for the 5 years or so that a top running back would obviously get contract-wise. Because if you had drafted him any earlier than next year, then the window of opportunity with an elite running back would be a lot smaller, given the fact that there would have been other areas to build around subsequent to that. So I just wonder if that is going to be what they think the final piece of the jigsaw, plug a good running back in and they're off.
And I've got a third theory, which is that they just really like Myles Gaskin, which is a slight worry, because I really like Myles Gaskin, don't get me wrong. I think he's a good change of pace guy that kind of can come out of the backfield, catch the ball, pick up a couple of yards with the ball in his hand. We saw him make a great play against the Raiders last year. He took the ball down the side of the field and scored, obviously, to pull us back into the game. But I just don't think you can hit the gaps like we were talking about earlier, like down in, down out, with him, you know, as the kind of three down guy who's going to get you 1,500 yards on the ground a season. Just don't think that's Myles Gaskin's role. I think he's a good number two back. We've seen him like dominate at the college level in that Washington team, which is fair enough. And obviously, Savon Ahmed did as well the following season when Gaskin left. We know they can produce yards, but they're just not going to frighten any defenses either, are you? You're not going to get the box stacked against them. You're going to very much like get a, it's almost like a challenge call. You know, they're going to leave the box unstacked and shut down our improved wide receiver core and kind of challenge Gaskin to really take the game to them. I just don't know whether he can do it. Go on, Lee, you want to come in on that?
No, I completely agree with everything you're saying. I think, you know, you're actually making the game harder possibly on Tua by not having a threat in the backfield that scares teams enough to do something about it. I think they're willing to say, go on, and if you can beat us with Myles Gaskin, do it. And we'll, you know, we'll live by that. You know, I hope I'm wrong. And I hope Simon's right that, you know, the last piece of this puzzle is we're going to drop in a good running back and really go with it. Again, I completely agree with you. I don't dislike Myles Gaskin, but I would love to pair him with a power back, you know, and, you know, we don't have the O-line for, I don't think, for Gaskin to be the guy. I just don't think he carries the size and strength to be a real hole hitter. I don't think we're going to create big enough lanes for people to just kind of saunter through. So,
yeah, that's it. And I think that they've picked up Malcolm Brown for a reason. They've seen that like four or five games for the last two or three years in Los Angeles, Malcolm Brown's had like a running back one style game. He doesn't do it for 16 games a season, but you do get three or four 100 yard weeks where they just like, you know, they gave him the Todd Gurley role when Todd Gurley needed a break. They gave him the main guy role last year while Cam Akers was getting up to speed. He can handle three or four games a season. So I do, as much as I said, I do think they really like Gaskin as the clear starter. I wonder if Brown is going to be kind of interjected in games. You know, if Gaskin's not getting anywhere and they just hand the ball off to him and let him run himself into the ground with the no concern about him getting, you know, like a major injury. They're just going to, if he gets a knock, they'll sit him out for a week and Savon Ahmed can do the same thing. That's what I think. What do you reckon, Lee?
I mean, do we see this as typical Brian Flores in regards to, I just want to pick one each week and say, right, this matchup suits this guy. He's RB1 this week. It's Malcolm Brown and we're and Gaskin's kind of backing him up. But next week, you know, we want a bit more speed, maybe a bit more finesse. So we're going with Gaskin and Malcolm Brown's backing him up for a change of pace and short down work. You know, that wouldn't surprise me. You know, that was kind of the thinking and what you just said completely plays into that Malcolm Brown can carry the, you know, the starting job for a number of weeks, but not necessarily, he's not proven that it's a, you know, for a whole season.
Yeah, that's it. Go on, Si.
Just looking at Myles Gaskin's stats from last season, and I did say Gaskins, but in the right context, Andy. he missed, obviously, quite a few games through COVID last year, and looking at the the stats. It looked like he only played in 10, if counted correctly, but he still had 584 yards at a good 4.1 average. If you extrapolate that over 16 games, he's approaching 1,000. And if you'd have said, give me a 1,000-yard rusher at the beginning of a season, you'd have taken it. So I don't think, in the whole scheme of things, he's actually that far off. And given also the fact that if you have an improved passing game compared to last year, when teams knew the Dolphins weren't going to pass and they had to perhaps consider the run more, I think it is going to open up potential opportunities for Gaskin to improve on his stats from last year for sure. So I don't necessarily believe the notion that it's all doom and gloom. I think there are opportunities, particularly if he can stay healthy and play for the whole season.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah, and obviously there are quite a lot of people who are high on Gaskin, and that team, like I said, seems to be the team itself. So you're absolutely right. If the worry I have is if Gaskin rushes for nearly 1,000 yards and we don't make the playoffs, that they stick with him for another year. I still want a Najee Harris. You just want a Rolls Royce in that backfield, don't you? I mean, Harris in the Hall of Fame game, that Steelers line has been decimated this offseason. I thought he still looked, you know, he was, there's a couple of runs, 5 to 10 yards, where he should have gone down after 1 or 2 yards. And it's all that's all important in the game, isn't it? So that's my big worry. I just want somebody like that. And I can see Lee grimacing because Mr. Najee Harris down there is the fact. But
he looked menacing in the backfield. That's part of it. You could see, you know, as soon as he was lined up there, the defense are going, right, we have to account for this. You know, it's, I think he's the sort of person who can do it on his own.
Yeah, you could almost see Big Ben. See Big Ben kind of going, finally, Lev Bowers finally been replaced. That sort of thing. Yeah, and, yeah. Go on, Si, sorry.
You mentioned about having that Rolls Royce back next year. You know the next college class coming out better than I. Are there any Rolls Royce type players that we should be keeping an eye on, do you think?
Yeah, you've got the likes of Breece Hall, who's really, really good for Iowa State. It's a bit one of those ones where Breece Hall's very athletic, and he's quite like Jonathan Taylor, actually, in sort of size and frame. I don't think he's as good as Jonathan Taylor, but that kind of back is there. I don't think I can really put my finger on any big, dominating physical back. You've got your Bijan Robinson, who's at Texas, who looks fantastic, but he's not eligible for the draft next year. There's a couple of other guys like Alabama's Brian Robinson, who's probably going to be a mid to late round guy, who's a bit more stocky, but doesn't come with the kind of reputation that that someone like Harris has this year. So yeah, there's definitely going to be guys there. I wonder again whether it's going to be quite a thin running back class next year, and the year beyond that is looking really good. People like Noah Kane and Robinson, like I mentioned before, are really good players. So yeah, I don't know whether they are going to address it next year. I'm sure there'll be one or two, though. That's always the way they emerge, don't they? And then you can kind of spend a second round pick on them. So that's what we hope the Dolphins do, I guess. But that being said, we've already talked about two positions today, which might need addressing high in the draft next year, in corner if X goes, and right tackle if it's a terrible year there. So those, you feel, again, are going to be more pressing on the sort of menu of who needs what, don't you? So there we go. Interesting. Flipping to the defensive side of the ball, we're going to look at the cornerbacks this week. Si, I'll flip it your way if I may, to start with. What's the kind of key to the secondary? Obviously, we've signed X, but is there another kind of key to the secondary that you think will keep it just as good as it was last year?
I think the key for me is seeing how Noah Igbinoghene develops in year two, because the poor lad's had a lot of pressure put on him already to perform, and he's, it appears from what we're reading, he's not exactly setting the world alight right now. So I believe he's going into a key year. I think he's had the benefit of the doubt up to now, but we can't keep saying, let's wait for him to develop, or he's too young. He's got to start showing it on the field. He's got to start being productive. So I think year two is really, really key for him. And I want to see him develop and force him into that conversation around potential replacement for X, wherever he may see his long-term future in the secondary. So for me, that's going to be a strong narrative, I feel, coming up throughout the season and watching his development.
Yeah, and you've already seen Omar Kelly kind of tweeting that he's really struggling this camp, obviously only a couple of weeks in. So that's really quite interesting, isn't it? And I wonder, si, how much game time do you reckon he's going to get this year? Do you think, obviously, like, if no one gets injured, do you reckon he's really going to see the field a lot?
Yeah, I think he ought to, and I think he will, because they know how they like to rotate and interchange personnel with regards to who's taking the field. So I'd like to think he gets significant playing time. But if he's struggling again, that's obviously going to have a detrimental effect. So it's almost like the chicken and egg, isn't it? You've got to give him playing time to build that confidence, but then the confidence has got to manifest to earn himself more playing time, I feel.
Yeah. And then, Lee, you've seen the last couple of days, they've got McCourty moved back to cornerback, obviously coming from the Patriots, which apparently no one really wanted to see, but kind of because of Igbinoghene struggling, they've moved McCourty back in there. I mean, obviously, we'd rather McCourty's playing safety if he had to, but do you think that's a kind of stopgap for now? If like X or Byron Jones goes down, is putting McCourty in there?
Yeah, I think at the moment that's the preference, because it sounds, even when you see posts that aren't focused on Noah, because I understand people have been quite down on him and there's been a lot of negative stuff coming out, but when you see the positive stuff coming out about the offense, is often that Noah's the one getting beat. Which is a concern, you know, whether that's, you know, I think Simon mentioned earlier, whether that's part of what played into, you know, settling the X dispute. It's a concern. He needs a lot of preseason playing time. I don't care if it's against backups. I think he needs confidence. And I hope that it's the fact that our offense is good that is why he's struggling. Because let's be honest, it's okay to struggle against our offense if we think our offense is good. We know that Byron Jones and Xavier Howard aren't going to struggle. They're two of the best corners in the NFL. That's not a debate. So if he's struggling a bit against some of the speed we've got, let's try and put a good spin on it and say maybe it's because just really the offense is actually playing that good. But yeah, I'd like to see him get a lot of time in the preseason, just as the confidence, you know, reading some of these defenses, maybe get your hands on a couple of balls, even if it's just to knock them down. They don't have to be picked. Just again, don't give up too many big plays.
Yeah, exactly. And we've always got to remember that he's only a year and a bit removed from Devonta Smith saying that it was the most difficult cornerback he went up against in college football. And that's the Heisman Trophy winner saying that. So there's clearly talent there. You wouldn't take a guy in the first round. He's still very young. So it all feels like it might still come together for him. It just feels like at some point he needs something to go right for him, because we all know how much confidence plays a part in this league. And if you kind of get like down on yourself and then your team gets down on you, then it's incredibly difficult to come back from that. So, yeah.
It feels like he's incredibly unlucky that the first time he was thrown to the Wolves was against Stephon Diggs. Yeah. And that actually, that was probably a bit, you know, we should probably be more critical about how that was handled by the Dolphins. I know it was late, it was in warm-ups, but and the game plan was set. But as soon as you saw him struggling, there's no reason to leave him getting beat all day. You know, that's not, I don't think that was good for his development, and I think we're starting to see that now. You know, but you know, as I say, you can give up yards and be a successful corner in the NFL, because we just paid Xavier, you know, we're paying Xavier Howard to do exactly that. He does give up yards, but you know, like you say, if you can get something to go your way, you can get a pick and you can get on that roll, then all of a sudden, you know, things can look an awful lot different very quickly.
Yeah, how many cornerbacks do you see drafted high that make an immediate impact? I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, maybe what Jalen Ramsey made a name for himself in his early days, but how many others can you name? Who was the one that Detroit drafted last year, pick number, was it three or four? Yeah, you don't hear much of him. So it's very difficult. We've got to acknowledge the fact that it's very difficult for a corner to adapt really, really quickly, especially in their first year. You also use Mike Gesicki as an example. We all thought after year one, there wasn't a lot there, but he suddenly came on, and I know it's a different position, but it's the principle of seeing that moment. There is that, and that moment, it all clicks and you can see it. I remember Xavier Howard, the moment it clicked for him was when he picked off Tom Brady twice in one game at Hard Rock, and ever since that point, he's always been the cornerback that you associate with being the best player on the Dolphins secondary. So there is going to be a moment where hopefully everything would click for him, but obviously we've got to see if that moment happens sooner rather than later.
Yeah, as someone who's never played corner in his life, I wonder if there's that moment, like you say, especially with Xavier Howard, again, a player who struggled in his, especially his rookie year. If there's that moment when you pick a ball off and you suddenly go, yes, I can trust my eyes. I understand, you know, I now understand what's going on. So if I see it, I can play it at full speed. Whereas I think it's probably doing a lot of thinking that slows down the process. And all of a sudden, you know, I don't think you can think too slowly against Albert Wilson or Jakeem Grant and stay with them. So it's, I think once you believe you can really trust in the technique and that everything else is kind of second nature, then things really start to change. But he's definitely a player who's on the precipice of go one way and you can become Xavier Howard, and go the other way, you can become Charles Harris. You know, where it's a player that, you know, you always think you've got talent, but never really manages to actually show it. I don't think he's a bad player. I don't think that's it at all.
No, exactly. And to be honest, when Si just mentioned Okuda there, I just had a quick look. Last year's cornerback class, Okuda, Christian Fulton, CJ Henderson, AJ Terrell, Jeff Gladney, Bryce Hall, none of those guys had a good season last year. Like, they all faced some serious growing pains. Jalen Johnson was good. Trevion Diggs played okay, but still gave up a couple of huge chunk yard touchdowns. Sorry. That, to me, kind of says everything we need to kind of, you know, understand from that he's got more development to do. Go on, Si, sorry.
Yeah, and of that class that you just listed, Gladney has been cut for off-the-field issues, and CJ Henderson is rumoured to be being shot for trade. So you can see that the general pattern there around first-round cornerbacks, it's not easy for them to make an impact in year one, and hopefully that's the case with Noah.
Yeah, exactly that. Quick mention for Nick Needham. Lee, what are you expecting from Nick Needham this year? Is he going to play a lot?
It's a really difficult one because I like Eric Rowe so much and what he does, especially against a tight end, where I think Nick Needham struggles slightly more against the size. Although Nick Needham is fast, makes a lot of tackles, also blitzes very well off the edge. So, I mean, I think there's a big role for him in this defense. Again, I think these are the toys that Brian Flores likes. The front of the defense has to do their job on time so he can play with the back end of the defense and get them to do all the kind of really exotic stuff.
Exactly. Go on, Si, go on, mate.
Just want to give a shout out to Trill Williams, actually. From what I don't know very much about him, other than the fact he came out of Syracuse, I think, with a good reputation, and obviously was cut by the Saints, and the Dolphins have picked him up, and he's currently sat at the bottom of the depth chart. That doesn't mean anything right now. So I'm looking forward to seeing if he gets an opportunity to make the team. Looking at the depth chart, they've got 12 cornerbacks. So it's a hell of a lot of personnel for effectively three starting jobs. And you've got to wonder what the odds are of Trill Williams making the team, but hopefully he'll be given a chance.
Yeah, fingers crossed, because he definitely had a good collegiate reputation and kind of just fought off a couple of injuries and stuff. So, yeah, fingers crossed on that. I think that's about it for our position group. So anyone else has got anything? No, all good. Nice one. Nice and kind of 50 minutes, I reckon, we've been going. So that's not bad at all. We'll be back next week, obviously, to talk about the first preseason game, talk about a couple more positions on the depth chart and see how they're kind of shaping out. And as always, we'll give you all the latest news from camp. And this time next week, actually, you'll have probably been able to buy your your Spurs tickets. If you're a Wembley season ticket or a Spurs season ticket holder, that could be very dramatic as well. I think we need to kind of talk about that next week and the ticket process there, because that's always a ton of fun, isn't it, guys? Fingers crossed that all goes to plan. And yeah, catch you next week, unless anyone else has got anything they want to add. No, all good. Nice one. Thanks for listening as always, and catch you soon.